afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you're tuned to KTVO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 9th of July, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Beverly Schooner from Saga about the AmeriCorps program and its opportunities. We'll learn about the Juneau Explorers Week with Lisa Jones from the City Museum. We'll talk to Tim Olson about things going on in 360 North Television and Create. At Writer's Almanac Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, rain heavy at times, low temperatures around 50 degrees, southeast winds to 15 miles per hour. Forecast for Tuesday looks like more rain with high temperatures around 56 degrees. Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain, and Wednesday night and Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 48 degrees.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In 2010, the Department of Energy released well monitoring data from the Wind River Reservation, showing uranium levels in a number of wells had spiked up to 100 times the legal limit. This year, the department released tap test results showing uranium levels nearly twice the legal limit, but later said the results were anomalies. It's believed the problem stems from radioactive waste left behind by a mill. In a two-part investigation, Wyoming Public Radio's Tristan Autone reports on how the mill got on the reservation and the people it's still affecting.
It's been over 50 years since the Susquehanna Western Uranium Mill got onto the Wind River Reservation. And Arapaho tribal member Mark Soldierwolf says in 1957, representatives from the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the uranium industry offered him money for his land to build the mill. When Soldierwolf refused to sell, he says officials took a different tack.
And then they said, well, Mark, we got a decree for you to read. He said, you know how to read? I said, no, I don't know how to read. Well, he said, we'll read it to you. So they read it to me, this and that, this and that, this and that. Toward the end, that's when it said that this land is now under ownership of eminent domain. And he said, as of this today, they said, we want you out here within 30 days or you're going to penitentiary.
Soldier Wolf named a number of individuals that were involved with facilitating the sale of his allotments for the uranium mill. Unfortunately, all had passed away except one, Wind River Realty Officer Lynn Jenkins. Jenkins claims to have appraised Soldier Wolf's allotments and claimed to be instrumental in the purchase of those allotments for Susquehanna Western. However, Jenkins also claimed that the family had voluntarily sold their land.
Well, I've got a strong suspicion that if you follow the money trail, you'll find it leads right to Mark. My suspicion is strong. What has he to gain for it? He had no legacy, he hadn't a damn thing.
Through the Freedom of Information Act, we learned that all of Soldierwolf's family signed consents of sale, including minors. However, the BIA provided no indication that money was ever paid for the land, and Mark Soldierwolf claims his family received no reimbursement. Tomorrow, we bring you the second installment of this two-part investigation. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
Members of the AARP National Policy Council are touring South Dakota this week. They'll visit transit officials and tribal and community leaders to discuss issues with public transportation. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
AARP State President for South Dakota, Dennis Easnick, says the National Policy Council is set to visit two South Dakota reservations and several other towns to look at public transportation problems. Easnick says those who come to South Dakota from urban areas will see the challenges many face to get to a pharmacy.
They talk about people that, you know, have to walk two blocks to get on a bus so they can go to a drugstore and buy their drugs. And I've continually told them, I said, you know, let me paint you a picture about what it is in rural America, where we probably have lots of people that live more than 100 miles from the nearest drugstore.
An AARP survey reveals, despite long distances to fill prescriptions, most elderly people would rather stay in their homes. South Dakota is slated to receive $12 million from the recently passed Federal Transportation Act to help improve public transit. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
On this day in 2010, a federal appeals court ruled a Texas school district cannot punish a Native American student for wearing his long hair and braids to express his family's religious beliefs. The kindergarten student in Needville, a town near Houston, was placed in in-school suspension for violating the school district's dress code requiring boys to have short hair. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. PSA here quickly. Indian Street from 8th down to Capitol Avenue will be intermittently closed tomorrow and Wednesday due to construction, so it is advisable to use alternate routes. Again, that's Indian Street from 8th down to Capitol Avenue will be closed tomorrow from and also Wednesday for construction. In the studio with us now is Saga's Executive Director, Beverly Schoon, will be here to talk about Saga and the AmeriCorps program. Beverly, thank you very much for being on the station today.
Thank you for having me.
First off, tell me about Saga.
Saga has been a nonprofit organization in Juneau for a long time, over 25 years. It's always had an element of service learning, experiential learning, getting things done by doing things. We run four different programs, and they all have the connection that we partner with AmeriCorps to support those programs. And I wanted to talk to you about one particular program today, which is our Connections program.
And a brief history of AmeriCorps?
AmeriCorps was actually an idea from the first Bush administration, which was then funded by Clinton. It came out of, you know, the Peace Corps, Civilian Conservation Corps. Basically, it's a domestic Peace Corps. You do national service. You get a little bit of money for a living stipend. And at the end, you get a federal education award.
All right. Now you can talk about Connections.
Thank you. Connections is such a great program. It is a year-round AmeriCorps opportunity for folks where we partner with nonprofit agencies and other agencies all around Alaska, and we find folks from all over the country to come, and they serve in these agencies and organizations for almost a year, and in return, they make a living stipend, they get health insurance, they get an educational award, and most importantly, they really gain valuable job skills in a professional setting. So our goal is to provide the organizations with capacity to help them engage youth and volunteers, and our members get really, really amazing hands-on experience in a professional setting. And we're recruiting. We need at least 20 more folks. We have positions in Yakutat, Cordova, Juneau, Anchorage, and I wanted to maybe just talk about a couple of these positions if we have time.
Please do.
Sure. We have one here in Juneau with United Way of Southeast Alaska, Community Research and Volunteer Development Coordinator. So they'll be working for United Way for the year, going to help the president support the development of the United Way Volunteer Center. We'll help him plan, organize, and implement events and facilitate some programs, do some reports, work on websites, and do some outreach activities. That position's in Juneau. Saga actually needs an AmeriCorps member to help with our construction program. Every year we work with Juneau Douglas High School to build a low-income house for the community, and we need a construction trainer assistant. So we're looking for someone who wants to do AmeriCorps who has construction experience. And then CARES, Credit Attainment Recovery and Employable Skills, is a Juneau School District program, after-school program. We need someone to help be an outreach liaison and healthy program assistant. Up at Anchorage, we've got positions with the University of Alaska Center for Human Development, a Youth Advocates Community Program Liaison, which is actually a great position. Their Center for Human Development works with folks with developmental disabilities and their families, and this position would actually be working with a youth group, building coalitions, doing teamwork, doing all sorts of projects and events. We're also looking for folks for Campfire up in Anchorage, program activities specialists, assisting Campfire USA and the Alaska Council to facilitate activities in the before and after school programs. And there's a whole bunch more. They're all on our website. Folks have to apply. They have to qualify. You have to be at least 21 years old. Some of them, you just need a high school diploma or a GED. Some you need some more education. You apply. We do interviews. If you're accepted, you commit to AmeriCorps for 11 months. You make $1,250 a month before taxes in a living stipend. You get health insurance, and at the very end, you get $5,550 for school. While you're in the program, if you have student loans, they can get deferred through the AmeriCorps program, which is great. And there's some other benefits depending on who qualifies. Connections was something that I did when I got out of actually, I did it before I went to college the first time, and then I did it after I got my degree. And, I mean, I can honestly say that I never would have ever had this position without the experience that I gained in the Connections program I did in Oregon. And so we're really looking for people who just want to break in to this work, who want to gain some more experience, who might not be able to walk into an entry-level job right away, but who have the education and experience and interest in these positions to serve for a year.
Is for local Juneauites or Alaskans or people from out of state as well, you said?
Actually, almost all of our Connections programs over the last couple of years have been from out of state, and now we're actually trying to recruit from in-state. We're looking for people who know of folks who want to stick around, who want to work in Alaska. We are the United Way Southeast Connections member that we had this year was offered a job there, and that's the sort of success stories that we're looking for. It would be great to get Alaskans in these positions, but we are recruiting nationally.
Website?
Our website is servealaska.org, and you look under current openings, and you can see all the position descriptions for everything. I just told you a couple of what we have. We have 20 different positions we're trying to fill right now. They can also call SAGA at 789-6172 and ask for Human Resources Manager Mike or Marilyn, our Connections Manager, if they have any questions.
Now we've got time to talk about something else than Sunset Battles.
Talk about what?
Sunset Battles.
What's Sunset Battles?
Paddles.
Sunset Paddles at the Eagle Valley Center?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just learning all the programs. I just started. But we definitely have programs coming up. We've got these great van programs where you're at work, kids need something to do, sign up at the EVC, go on these van adventures for the day, get dropped back off at Foodland. There's some great programming that's happening there. Most of those opportunities you have to call about right now. We're updating our website. It's still a little rough, but you can call it 789-6172 and talk to Nate, our Eagle Valley Center manager, or we have two Connections members serving with the EVC as well, so you can talk to them about our upcoming programming as well.
All right, Beverly Schoonover, thank you very much for coming down. That phone number one more time?
789-6172. And thank you, Jeff, for wearing that bright, sunny shirt today on this cold, gray day.
It's one of those radio shirts, radio-friendly shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming by today, Beverly.
Thank you.
She's bigger and she works all night. She smiles like an angel on her mountain bike. She made the cookies and they taste just right. Jenny is a volunteer. Well, they open up the hall in the afternoon. They help performers to stay in tune. They'll be cleaning up by the light of the moon. Let's hear it for the volunteers. And it's 1, 2, 3, hey! Help them put the chairs away. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here. Let's hear it for the volunteers. Oh, there goes Spike, he's seen it all. He's the one who let the curtain fall. I was changing clothes and I mooned you all. Let's hear it for the volunteers. Oh, Kathy is the one in the yellow pants. She loves the music, but she can't dance. But with her computer now she writes grants. Let's hear it for the volunteers. And it's 1, 2, 3, hey! Help them put the chairs away. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here. Let's hear it for the volunteers. Thank you. and he works the sound. Thunderstorm's coming and he looks around. He's all patched in, but he's lost his ground. Let's hear it for the volunteers. Oh, it ain't for the money, cause they work for free. We're a great dysfunctional family. It's all for the music and the company. Let's hear it for the volunteers. And it's one, two, three, hey! Help them put the chairs away. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here. Let's hear it for the volunteers. And it's one, two, three, hey! Help them put the chairs away. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here. Let's hear it for the volunteers.
A group called Mustard's Retreat. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Time is 3:16. In the studio with us now is Alicia Jones from the Juneau Douglas City Museum here to talk about the Juneau Explorers program. Alicia, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the Juneau Explorers program?
The Juneau Explorers program is a week-long summer program for kids 8 to 11, and it's a half day, so it's just the afternoons, 12:30 to 4:30, and it's basically, as the name entails, we explore Juneau. So we look at, Juneau history, we learn a little bit about the culture, there's a variety of art projects, and each day we kind of have a different focus, and we try to mix up either a hike on a historic trail or some sort of outdoor activity, or exploring of Juneau, and then come back to the museum for an art activity.
How long has it been going on?
I believe this will be the 8th year that we've been doing the summer program. And then I think about 5 or 6 years ago, we also started doing a spring break version.
This goes how long? A week long?
Yes. So it's July 30th through August 3rd, 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. And participants can sign up for one day or the whole week, so it's really flexible.
Cool. A schedule of activities?
Well, Monday we're going to be learning about Tlingit wood carving and touring town and looking at totem poles, and then we'll come back to the museum and do a printmaking activity with local artist Sherry McDonald. On Tuesday, we'll work with Peter Schneider from the U.S. Forest Service at Sandy Beach, and he's going to talk about topographical maps and compasses, and then we'll do a compass course. We did this for spring break, and it was a lot of fun. So we'll be doing that again, and then we'll be hiking part of the Treadwell Trail and then making our own water wheels. On Wednesday, we're going to kind of focus on the environment in Juneau, and we're going to go on a hike with Discovery Southeast naturalist Kevin O'Malley, and then create Andy Goldsworthy-inspired art, so using just the materials in that area to create art. And we'll take photos so that the kids have something to remember their project by. And then on Thursday, we're going to explore different vantage points around town and even go up the tram to go up Mount Roberts partway. And then we're going to learn about backdrops and set design, so kind of just exploring different viewpoints and local artists. Avril Valise will do an art activity with the kids afterwards. And then Friday, this is kind of we usually go gold panning. And this year, we're actually going to be able to go underground and go on the AG mine tour with Jerry Harmon. So we'll get to explore underground for a bit, and then we'll go pan for gold.
If anybody knows about mining, it's Jerry.
Yeah, so we're kind of a varied week, but it's always a lot of fun, and the kids seem to really enjoy the different projects.
Sounds like it a lot of times to get outdoors and enjoy the fun. So kids should dress for the weather.
Yes, definitely. We go rain or shine, so definitely being prepared for days like today, and hopefully it usually we at least have some of the week has good weather, so hopefully that'll be the case this year.
How many people can you take?
We can take up to 20. So, you know, it does fill up some days, so we definitely encourage people to register sooner than later.
And what is the cost?
For each day, it's $36, or it's $180 for the week, and that includes all the materials fee for the art projects, any admission or entrance fees, transportation. There's one, at least one day we'll be taking a bus, so that'll cover that. And we also provide a light snack during the afternoon.
All right. If people need more information or would like to register, how do they do so?
There's information on the museum website. They can download a registration form. We also have registration forms available at the museum, so they can stop in.
A lot of stuff going on at the Juno Douglas City Museum. Talk about a couple more things going on. What's on right now?
Well, we still have our summer exhibit, Sidney Lawrence, Reflections of the Great Northwest, on display. And then A Klondike Tale, a Juno Perspective by Avril Veliz. So that's in our audiovisual gallery.
Let's talk a little bit about the walking tours.
Sure. It's a program we've been doing for several years, and this year we've actually revised the route, and we've added a stop at the Alaska's Capitol Inn for some refreshments at the end. So it's kind of a nice time to, you can explore, get a almost like a private tour of downtown Juneau and get a lot of the history, and then you get to finish it off at a, you know, historic home and learn about the house, as well as Linda always has great cookies and stuff. She's a wonderful baker. So those are offered Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 1:30, and this year we are also offering the walking tours by appointment. So if you've got people coming to town, or you know, you yourself are interested in coming, you can call, and if we've got staff or volunteers that are able to do the walking tour, we will definitely schedule.
But how long is the tour?
It's about an hour and a half, and it's $20 for adults and $15 for youth 12 and under.
What are some of the highlights you visit?
Take me on a virtual tour. We start at the Juno Douglas City Museum on our front steps and talk about the history of the building, and also the significance of the statehood site. And then we kind of get a broader view of the downtown area by going to the state office building observation decks and looking out. We talk a little bit about Telephone Hill. And then we come by the Capitol, kind of head down 4th Street, talk about the Birdman of Alcatraz, and then we kind of move up towards along Gold Street to 5th, and we stop in at the St. Nicholas Russian Orthodox Church and also talk about Star Hill and Chicken Ridge and the schools that used to be up there, and then we finish off at Alaska's Capitol Inn.
And what are people's maybe big highlights that they talk about at the end of the tour? I say, I'm so glad we visited the blank, and you fill in the blank.
You know, it varies depending on what people's interests are, but a lot of times, you know, the Birdman of Alcatraz, even though there's not a lot at that site, that story is definitely a big one. And also just, I think, the view from the deck and just getting that broader perspective of how much of downtown Juneau has been filled in over the years. And so just... when I do the tour, I bring a notebook of historic images. And so, you know, you can stand there and we can kind of line up the photograph with present-day Juno and just seeing that contrast of, you know, what the waterfront used to look like.
How did you learn all the items that are on the tour?
Lots of research and practice.
And how many tour guides do you have?
Right now, we have 3 tour guides, including myself, and... we also are training 2 new volunteers who are interested in starting to lead the tour.
The reason I'm asking that is because it's probably a little too late this year, but maybe next year if people can get training?
Yes, definitely. You know, we're always looking for volunteers, and if people have a specific interest in, you know, providing walking tours versus helping out at the front desk, we definitely welcome their inquiries.
And phone number for the City Museum?
Our phone number is 586-3572.
All right, Alicia Jones, thank you very much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgot to ask.
I will just mention real quick that for locals, we do have annual passes during the summer months. Since we do charge admission, it's $20, and that gets the pass holder and a guest unlimited visits to the museum. So if you come by twice, you've basically paid for that. So if people are interested, they can contact the museum, or, again, they're available at the front desk.
And Lisa Jones, thank you for coming by and talking about the Juno Explorers program.
Thank you.
Of a rabbit falling through a hole in the ground. A magical, mystical world was there where the Queen and Mad Hatter were found. I grew so tall and shrunk so small with Alice as my faithful guide. The Cheshire Cat, he made me laugh so hard that I almost cried.
Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 9th of July, 2012. It's the birthday of Dame Barbara Cartland, author of several hundred books, most of them romance novels, born in Birmingham, England, 1901. Published her first novel when she was 25. It was called Jigsaw. From the 1970s onward, she produced an average of 23 books a year, and when she died in 2000, she left behind 160 manuscripts. It's the birthday of Oliver Sacks, born in London, 1933, to an extended family of doctors and scientists and religious Zionists. Oliver Sacks, who became a doctor, neurologist, and who has turned case studies of patients with neurological conditions into narratives. In 2001, he wrote a memoir, Uncle Tungsten, Memories of a Chemical Boyhood, in which he talks about his childhood in England during World War II, his Uncle Dave, who made light bulbs, and his older brother, Michael. Both brothers, Oliver and Michael, had been sent to a boarding school during the war, suffered horrible conditions, routinely whipped and bullied, and at the age of 15, his brother began exhibiting symptoms of psychosis. He saw messages everywhere, felt his thoughts were being read. And to cope with the trauma of his brother's illness, Oliver Sacks sought refuge in the neat, orderly, periodic table of elements, sometimes thought about becoming a chemist. And though he went into medicine, he still likes to give elements as birthday gifts. He said, 10 is element 50, and since 10 people have turned 50 lately, I'm out of 10. A good friend of mine was 80 recently, and I said to him, I wish you were 79, because then I could have given you something made of gold. But since you're 80, I have to enclose a bottle of mercury. And it was on this date, 1958, that Lituya Bay in Alaska was hit with the largest mega tsunami ever recorded. Lituya Bay on the Alaska Panhandle, a T-shaped fjord about 7 miles long. An earthquake hit that triggered a rock slide. 40 million cubic yards of rock and ice dropped 3,000 feet into the water, causing a tidal wave 1,720 feet high, 300 feet taller than the Empire State Building. Here's a poem for today by Kim Adonizio. Elephant seals, Año Nuevo. There they lie, fasting and molting, and not moving but for an occasional stray flipper that idly rises and sinks down into the mass of massive bodies. This is their summer's work, before the bulls swim in to bloody each other for mates. We watch their great sides heave, the effort it takes to stay where they've arrived, amazed they've managed something we can't. What would it be like to live slow and huge, the low slopes of the dunes marking a horizon whose limits we weren't compelled to challenge? For these seals, there is no path that leads away, no car waiting in the wavering heat of the parking lot, and no road takes them to the made world. Here, we're all immensely complicated, and nothing, my darling, is seasonal. Once you and I leave this place, we won't return to it. Poem by Kim Adonizio, Elephant Seals, Año Nuevo, from The Philosopher's Club, published by Boa Editions Limited, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, providing automated tools to monitor and manage a business's online reviews, because bad reviews can be bad for business. Learn more at Reputation.com. And by CenturyLink, linking Americans and Fortune 500 companies to what matters most. Learn more at CenturyLink.com. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Boogie like there's no tomorrow at the Southeast Alaska State Fair, July 26th through the 29th, with incredible headliners like reggae artist Clinton Theron and the Boogie Brown Band, Larry and his Flash, rocking guitarist Eric McFadden, and Before the Groove, the mesmerizing performance of Pendulum Aerial Arts. Just a taste of what to expect at the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines, July 26th through the 29th. For a full lineup of entertainment, visit feakfair.org.
Our next guest is Mr. Ron Clark. Ron Clark is a lifelong falconer who has taken on all kinds of work over the years to support his obsession with birds of prey. Governor's assistant, beer server, state biologist, janitor, radio announcer, legislative aide, and professional fundraiser. He has surveyed peregrine falcons on the Yukon River and lived with the Inupiaq whaling crews for 3 seasons on the sea ice near Point Hope. He enjoys playing handball and softball, the former better than the latter. He is a lifelong member of the oldest political satire troupe in Southeast Alaska. Well, he notes the only political satire troupe in South Alaska. Please welcome to the stage, Ron Clark.
Well, let's get the secret out of the way right up front. I love professional wrestling. Let me qualify that. I loved professional wrestling when I was a kid in the early 60s, when it was real. Not like this stuff we have now. Back then, I was about 6. My brother was about 8. We knew it wasn't real. Brian Rindall's grandfather told us it was. When that guy jumped over the edge of the ring and grabbed the bell that they ring to start and end the rounds and hits the other guy on the head, he knew it was real. But my brother and I knew better. We knew it wasn't real. We knew they shot it down at the WTCN-TV studios right there on the edge of Lake Calhoun in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Channel 11. And they shot it in a studio that was probably a third the size of this room. And it was the same place where they videoed. Well, I don't know. They probably filmed it back then. It wasn't even videotape. They had a lunchtime program for kids called Lunch with Casey. Casey Jones, guy came out dressed as a railroad conductor, and we did Lunch with Casey. And every afternoon it was Popeye and Pete had a bleacher full of kids and shoved them full of candy and sugar and showed them cartoons. And then Saturday night, All-Star Wrestling. My brother and I loved All-Star Wrestling. We could be anywhere in the house, and the TV would be on, and we'd hear that. It was the theme song from All-Star Wrestling. We'd come running from wherever we were, sat down and watched All-Star Wrestling. Now, we kind of figured that every city in America had its own version of All-Star Wrestling, and the world champion was really like just the world champion of Minneapolis. And our world champion was a guy named Vern Gagne, who was a legitimate wrestler. He wrestled in the 1948 Olympics. He was a Greco-Roman wrestler. And the guy was in great shape. He looked kind of like Roy Rogers with a bald head. And he had obviously taken good care of himself, and he wrestled well, and he sold this stuff called Jera Speed in the commercials after his wrestling matches. And he'd get out there and whoop some guy and then go over to the little interview area just off from the ring and do his Jera Speed commercials and talk to Marty O'Neill, the ringside announcer, this tiny little slightly built guy with hair slicked back and horn-rimmed glasses. He was the perfect foil next to these giant wrestlers. He had this enormous microphone, and he'd sort of hold it up and hope he didn't get hurt. And Vern would get out there and talk about the match and talk about what great product Jera Speed was. So there were good guys, there were bad guys. Turns out, in the trade, they aren't good guys and bad guys. They're baby faces and heels. And Vern was a baby face. Vern was kind of the ultimate baby face because he was the ultimate good guy. There were any number of wrestlers you probably heard from. Jesse Ventura came out of that. Hulk Hogan came out of that. Andre the Giant came out of that. The Iron Sheik. Baron Von Raschke, master of the claw hold, you know. And they all fell into, most of them fell into those two categories, baby faces and heels. There were the scientific wrestlers, the ones who probably wrestled in high school or wrestled in college. And our favorite scientific wrestler was Doug Gilbert. And Marty O'Neill, without fail, every time Doug Gilbert would get into the ring, Marty O'Neill said, yeah, you'll see more moves out of this guy in 2 minutes than most wrestlers will show you in a year. You know, without fail. Doug Gilbert would go out and actually wrestle. There was another category, and I don't know if they had a name, but they were kind of the team that the Globetrotters play. You know, they sort of wipe up the court with these guys you've never heard from. Our guy was Kenny Jay. Kenny Jay would come out, and he was dressed in long tights, which was always a dead giveaway. This guy's going to get his ass kicked. He's long tights. And Kenny Jay was just supremely confident. You really had to feel for the guy because they would introduce Kenny Jay. You know, in this corner at 137.5 pounds is not Kenny Jay, but the very capable Kenny Jay. And Kenny Jay would run out to the middle of the ring and kind of throw his fist in the air like, yeah, Kenny Jay. And we'd all go, oh, man, Kenny Jay's going to get his ass kicked. You know, we just knew it. And over in this corner, and it would invariably be one of the heels, 230 pounds, Mad Dog Vachon. And Mad Dog, of all the heels, Mad Dog was a heel's heel. This guy, 5'7", 230, 235, and had more hair on his body than most people have on their head. He looked like a bear. He shaved his head, but he trimmed his beard. He had this beard that sort of ran down the edges of his jaw, and just as it reached his chin, it would come up in two little points up to the corners of his mouth. And he had this mustache, and he was missing a couple of teeth, although the rumor was, and this is one thing we did believe, the rumor was that he filed his teeth into points. And Mad Dog Vachon would be, you know, all his promotional photographs, he was he had fists clenched, or he was clawing with his hands, and he had chains wrapped around him. And I mean, he was just an evil-looking guy. Remember, this is like early 1960s. This is the Cold War. I mean, we knew this guy had to be a communist. Man, he talked funny. You know, like Minnesotans can talk about other people talking funny, you know. But he talked funny. He was gruff, and he had this kind of weird accent. Man, he must be a Russian or a communist. And so Mad Dog would go out, and he was a good wrestler. He flew around, man. He was amazing. He had this list of his favorite maneuvers, and I Googled him just to see, just to kind of refresh my memory. His signature move, his number one signature move, biting the opponent's forehead. That was even more prevalent than the finishing move, the pile driver, which Mad Dog was very good at. So Mad Dog goes out. One night, my brother and I are watching, rapt, just totally fascinated by this. Mad Dog goes out, wipes up the floor with Kenny J or whoever it was that they put out there as cannon fodder that night, and then retires to the little interview space with Marty O'Neill. And the whole point of that was to fire people up to come to the live performance the next night at the St. Paul Civic Center or the Minneapolis Sports Arena or wherever they happen to be, and they'd taunt the crowd and get them all fired up and say, oh, come on down and see what's going on. So Mad Dog goes over to the interview room with Marty O'Neill, and Marty O'Neill is scared to death of this guy, as he should have been. I mean, he files his teeth. Come on. And Mad Dog starts making vile threats at the camera like he always does. He's, get down to the St. Paul Civic Center tomorrow night. I'm going to tear Vern Gagne apart of you. 12-foot chain-link fence cage. We're going to have machetes and chainsaws, and only one of us is going to come out alive, and I know it ain't going to be Vern Gagne. And Marty O'Neill is sort of shrinking in horror as he's just going on and on, and he's starting to froth at the mouth, and he's jumping around and getting really crazy. And this big gob of spit flies off his lower lip and makes a beautiful, perfect arc and lands directly in the middle of the lens of the camera. You can see it. It's this big gray shadow on the lens of the camera. And the whole world just stops. Mad Dog saw it. Marty saw it. The huge, unblinking eye of the camera certainly saw it. And my brother and I just sat and watched, like, oh, man, what's he going to do? And the camera started to shudder. You could see it start to shake. And you could hear the director in the back cackling. Marty O'Neill looks at the ground, doesn't quite know what to do, sinks to his knees, gets out of the camera shot, crawls away on his hands and knees, leaving Mad Dog there with the great unblinking eye of the TV camera. And he gave it a shot. He really did. He tried so hard. He was going to get all fired up. Get down to the St. Paul Civic Center tomorrow night. And Mad Dog got the giggles. I'm going to tear him apart. And the poor guy is just weeping. And you can hear it. The audience has started chuckling. Everybody in the backstage crew is shuddering. And the poor guy sat there for the longest time and tried desperately to make idle, vile threats at the camera. And finally, they cut to a Gerispeed commercial and saved him. But the secret, turns out, Mad Dog was a real wrestler. Mad Dog met Vern Gagne at the 1948 Olympics. Mad Dog was a really good wrestler. And Mad Dog was a sweetheart off screen, out of the ring. He would stay till all hours of the night signing autographs, taking care of his fans, posing for pictures, shooting beer commercials for the local bars. And he was a really sweet guy. And a little bit ago, Mad Dog got hit by a car in his home in Iowa, but it didn't stop him. He lost a leg, but Mad Dog gutted it through. He's too mean to die. He's 83 years old now, and Mad Dog, wherever you are, good on you, brother. We love you. Thank you.
When I walk down the street It's right there in front of me. It's a great big poster on the telephone pole, and it says female mud wrestling. Ooh, female mud wrestling. Female mud wrestling. When I turn on my TV, there's always a segment that offends me, and that's the one on female mud wrestling. Ooh, female mud wrestling. Female mud wrestling. I'm not like Stephen Melody. I don't like female mud wrestling. I'm not like Stephen Melody. I don't like female mud wrestling. I don't like female mud wrestling. All right, audience, here comes your part. When I say, I don't like female mud wrestling, you say, she doesn't like female mud wrestling. All right, let's try it. I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling, cause it's stupid, it's embarrassing. I don't like female mud wrestling. It's stupid, it's embarrassing. I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling.
She doesn't like female mud wrestling.
I don't like female mud wrestling. All together now. I don't like female mud. Those types of places.
Two opposing views on female mud wrestling. The boy that we heard from Ron Clark recorded live at one of the Mud Rooms festivals, and most recently the Frank the Folk Singer CD provided us with a look at female mud wrestling. Some of those things that are seen on TV, and another thing that's seen on television is the 360 North television, and I've invited Tim Olson from the 360 North Programming Department to come in here and tell us about creative and all that stuff that's going on TV these days.
Well, that was probably the very best transition of music you've picked, at least all week. Of course, it's Monday, but
give me a chance, I
like that. And it's hard to follow after that. You know what else I could sing, but that song had a really big finish.
There's no female mud wrestling on 360 North.
There is no female mud wrestling on 360 North. And now that there are three public television services available to the people in Juneau, I'm looking at the schedules here in front of me, and there is not female mud wrestling on any of the channels this week. I'm sorry for that, Jeff, if you were looking forward to that. 360 North has carried the Roller Girls in the past, but there has never been any mud wrestling, to the best of my knowledge.
That's only the first.
Well, you never know.
Public affairs programming at its finest.
Yeah, and of course we're expanding services, so you never know what might happen. But one of the things that people are noticing, and I've been getting calls over the last week or so, we're hearing from people, is that they like having three different public television services in Juneau. We know that people have liked having three public radio stations in Juneau, and now we're offering three different public television streams. 360 North is alive and well, and we have some really interesting programming this week. One of the changes that people have noticed has been that we have a new public television service, a little bit different schedule. Alaska Public Television replaced Alaska One during the first week of July. And we've heard a lot of positive things. We've heard some people have called looking for programs that they usually watch that are on slightly different times. But great program lineup on Alaska Public Television, great program lineup on 360 North. And, yes, you mentioned the Create Channel, which I believe when Bill Legere and I were in here week before last, we said it was coming soon, and it did come very soon. By about July 1st, we had the Create Channel was on the transmitter here in Juneau and was available on cable, channel 94. Some people are still having a hard time finding that one. And there is so now we have three times as much programming, or at least a third more than we had in June with all the different services. And the Create Channel is new to Juneau, but I had called this morning from someone who said that they were trying to find which channel it was on because they had watched this channel when they're visiting relatives in California, and they loved all the cooking shows. So I pulled up the schedule for Create this week because I'm starting to get a lot of calls about that. You can find the schedules and information and links to all of the programming for all three of the channels, for 360 North, for KTOO Alaska Public Television, and for the Create channel, which is a PBS programmed channel, by going to ktoo.org. I just wanted to mention that up front. There's a little story that talks about it. Create is highlighted today on the 360 or on the ktoo.org website, and there's also links from 360north.org. Some of the cooking shows that are on just this week that this caller this morning called about, there's many, many new Scandinavian cooking, Chow Italia, Patty's Mexican Table, Tommy Tang's Easy Thai Cooking, Lydia's Italy in America, Barbecue University. There are dozens of cooking shows on the Create channel. And what Create represents are some of the many, many very popular programs that were created for public television but won't fit into just one channel. You know, they developed this whole other channel because there are woodworking shows and travel shows and quilting shows and sewing shows and many, many cooking shows, which public television has been very popular on public TV for years. But when you only have 24 hours a day with a primary, you know, normal public television station like we air on KTOO TV here, there isn't room to put all these programs on there. There are also many home improvement and woodworking programs on the Create channel, many creative programs like the painting painting shows, the quilting and sewing shows, and there are a lot of really interesting travel programs. This week, The Season Traveler's on, Rick Steves' Europe is on, Richard Bang's Adventures with a Purpose, Travel Scope, Rudy Max's World, Equitrekking for people who like horses. There's something for everyone on the Create channel. You can find out more about that by going to ktoo.org and getting the link to the Create channel programming. And it's all new, and people are just getting used to it because we haven't had that in Juneau before. So that is some of the exciting new material that we've just added in the last weeks. People who watch the regular KTOO public television, which you find on, you know, channel 3.1 if you have a digital television and you watch over the air in Juneau, or you find on GCI cable channel 10, the same great shows are there. We've got the Antiques Roadshow tonight. It's Monday. Tomorrow night, Frontline will be on at 8 o'clock. On Wednesday, we've got Nature and Nova, two Novas back-to-back on Wednesday night. Thursday is This Old House night, including moving on into documentaries and POV, which is the documentary series that is very popular on public television. So almost all of the same programs are there. Some people have noticed a few new programs and called in and commented on those that they like. And probably one of the questions I've heard most about was Doc Martin, which is a series that's been on Alaska One and was on Alaska One for years, and a very popular series. Doc Martin is on Alaska Public Television. It was on last Saturday night, and it's on this Saturday night at 7 o'clock. And not only when we made the switch to Alaska Public Television was Doc Martin included, but we have, I think, all 8 seasons have been purchased to go back and run the whole series again, and I think they're going to start that in the fall here. So there was a couple things that moved, and people were concerned about finding it. I wanted to make sure I pointed out that the programs are there. Need to click and look on the schedule link to at ktoo.org to see where if some of the programs have moved a little bit in their time slots. Most of them are on the same night.
You'll have to excuse me. Who is Doc Martin?
Oh, this is one of those sort of British comedies, very popular program. There have been a couple of very popular British comedies this year on public TV. Downton Abbey is one of them, and Doc Martin is one of the other ones. It's been on for many years now. Looks like there was all sorts of things going on in Doc's life recently, and some of those went across the June to July month, and we wanted to make sure everyone knew that those programs, the season that was currently running is finishing out on KTOO this last week and this week, and then we also acquired all of the Doc Martin programs, so the series will start over again at some point. It's from the beginning for those people who have not yet watched it and for those people who would like to see it again and or missed programs early on.
You and I thought it was a shoe.
Yeah, I know. That's what most people think.
Really
unless,
big shoe.
Unless they are big public television viewers. And I know we're talking to radio folks, and a lot of you don't have televisions, or some of you don't have televisions. That's okay. I think there's a book about this as well, so maybe you could read it. 360 North has great programs as usual every week. 360 North is one of the statewide services that originates right here in Juneau from our KTOO headquarters here on Egan Drive. couple of interesting programs that I have on the list of must-watches. There's an interesting documentary on at night called Liquid Tonight at 9, Liquid Assets, the Story of Our Water Infrastructure. Part of our public affairs mission is to try to find interesting documentaries that help us learn more about things going on in the rest of the country, these types of public affairs topics. So that's on tonight, Liquid Assets. I've had a couple people asking about it because there's been some advertising. Tuesday nights, we still have our Alaska Native and Native American programming, Northwest Indian News, Native Report, and Alaska documentaries tomorrow night. Wednesdays, we highlight Alaska documentaries that are specials that we acquire. And this Wednesday at 8 p.m., we have The Eskimo and the Whale, which aired last spring, and we're bringing it back.
That's great.
Very interesting documentary shot on the North Slope community of Barrow and the other North Slope communities. And then after that, at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, this is probably one that I would really recommend. It's called A Fall from Freedom, and it is about capture and captive breeding of orcas and dolphins for museum or for zoos and aquariums. Very controversial and a controversial documentary, but one that has some interesting facts and is interesting to watch. So there is a ton of great programming. We're adding BBC News and Alaska Weather on Saturdays. That started last week. So on Saturday night at 7 and 7.30, we've added an extra newscast in Alaska Weather. And every weekday, Monday through Friday, we have BBC World News and Newsline before the 7 o'clock BBC World News and Alaska Weather. So we have 2 hours of news and weather now from 6 to 8 p.m. every weeknight.
And all this information can be found at what website?
360north.org has all of the programming for 360 North and our schedule there. And if you go to ktoo.org, you can get a link to all three of the television services, including the Create Channel and Alaska Public Television. And there's an article there that explains the changes that have recently happened and how you can get more information. And you can always call KTOO or go onto any of the websites and hit the contact button and ask questions, and we reply to those as soon as we get them.
Tim Olson, thank you very much for coming down.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. Cornell Lab of Ornithology maintains the largest collection of bird sounds in the world. Let's listen as Arthur Allen, the lab's founder, narrates, in 1958, an evening in Sapsucker Woods.
There is a charming spot in the Finger Lakes country of central New York that we know as Sapsucker Woods. Friends have given it to Cornell University to be set aside in perpetuity as a bird sanctuary. At its northern border is a woodsy pond where the waterfowl vie with the frogs and toads to make the nights musical and interesting. We call it Sapsucker Woods because here the yellow-bellied sapsucker finds a place sufficiently cool to satisfy its Canadian urge and sound its irregular Morse code and rear its young south of its normal range. We now invite you to sit with us as the shadows lengthen and listen to the changing calls of the wild. The scarlet tanager is the first to greet us from a nearby pine, singing like a robin in a hurry with a cold. Hurry, worry, flurry, blurry. Now the descending spirals of the veery. Across the road, over the open field, a bobolink sings his last song of the evening. And then gives over to the vesper sparrow that does his finest singing in the twilight.
Enjoy the rest of the story and learn more about the lab at birdnote.org.
Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 80.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. And Excursion Inlet and IC Strait here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. Or online at www.ktwo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon, we'll learn about the upcoming Southeast Master Gardeners annual garden tour. We'll also meet members of the Resurrection Lutheran Quilters. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon. Weather forecast for tomorrow, tonight, looks like low temperatures and rain and low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, rain in the morning, then a chance of rain in the afternoon. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today. If you'd like to be on a Juno Afternoon or know someone that should be, please have them give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown. My phone number is 463-6425. Thanks for tuning in and have a good evening.
So that I worked here, I had 4 patients. Now we have at least 50 diagnosed.
A resurgence of black lung disease among coal miners. Today is Monday, July 9th, and this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. More than 40 years ago, the government...